PRN.FM.
Glass. It's time for It's All About Food, when we talk about my favorite subject, food. And this is a time where we tune in love with me, whether you're listening now or sometime in the future, which is what I love about these podcasts. You can take it in when you're ready and when it's right for you. Tune in love. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world today, and on this program, I like to think we talk about things that are happy, joyful, delicious. We have a lot of answers that are easy and good for you, and good for the planet, and good for everybody. So let's just have some fun, and maybe you'll learn something along the way. I know I always do. Let's do some tuning in love now with my first guest, Jill Nussanow. She's known as the Veggie Queen. She's a registered dietitian who has been teaching vegetarian cooking at Santa Rosa Junior College in Sonoma County and throughout the country since 1985. She's the author of 3 award-winning cookbooks, The New Fast Food, The Veggie Queen Pressure Cooks Whole Food Meals in Less Than 30 Minutes, Nutrition Champs, The Veggie Queen's Guide to Eating and Cooking for Optimum Health, Happiness, Energy, and Vitality, and The Veggie Queen Vegetables Get the Royal Treatment. And we will be talking about a new book, Vegan Under Pressure, because it's about pressure cooking. Jill, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Karen. Thank you.
You're welcome. Are you ready to tune in some love with me?
I was just going to say I love love.
I love love. Who doesn't love love? What's not to love?
I agree. I'm there.
Good. And you know, those of us like you, like me, who have been doing this for so long, we just know how good it feels, how delicious it is, how we're not deprived of anything at all. And we just want to share this good feeling, this love, because it feels good. And why shouldn't everybody feel good?
Well, I think everybody should feel great.
Feel great. Exactly. Okay, now, we've talked about pressure cooking before. I know you're quite the pressure cooking expert. I love the title of your book, Vegan Under Pressure. I have to tell you, I'm one of those people who has never ventured into the pressure cooking world. Reading your book makes me a little more comfortable and curious about it. And you give a great deal of information about pressure cooking. So, I guess we should talk first about why people, if they know anything about pressure cooking, why they might be cautious about it.
Well, I think there's a big myth, and some of it is not myth, around pressure cooking. There was a time, and I have to say it happened to me, with my mother's pressure cooker, where the pressure cookers either weren't watched, and actually there's a scene in Holly Go Lightly, I think, where the pressure cooker explodes. So people have this image in their head of exploding pressure cookers. But I've been using a pressure cooker for more than 20 years, and I've never had that happen. And I give my students at the junior college where I teach about 5 minutes of instruction, and they've never had that happen either. So that there's a big fear around what could happen. And I think recently, because of these pressure cooker bombs, people are really getting freaked out about it. But I use pressure cookers for food explosions, not for killing anyone. So I think that that's really the fear. And there is a fear of doing things wrong, or maybe their mother or grandmother used the pressure cooker and the food all came out like mush. But that is not what needs to happen. So I think because it's so new, and the way that I like to explain it in the book is it's like driving. Before you started driving, you know, you might have gotten like been like, oh, how do I do all those things? But after you do it for a while, you become very comfortable. And it is a whole new skill. And I think that's where people kind of have another fear, because a lot of people are like, well, I've been cooking for 40 years. I ought to know how to do this. And it's not an intuitive thing necessarily. So there is a learning curve for sure.
Okay. So then people would ask, if it takes effort, why would I want to do it?
Well, if you love beans and you love whole grains and you want to get those foods on your table in a fairly short time, that would be the reason to do it. If you soak beans and you cook them, like black beans, pinto beans, white beans, they'll cook in 4 to 6 minutes at pressure, which is probably a total of, 15 to 20 minutes from beginning to end. And what I like to say is you can't get in your car or travel to the store and buy a can in the time that you could cook them at home, and you know exactly what you have.
Well, everybody's definitely into doing things as fast as they can, that's for sure. And I can understand if you want to pair healthy eating, and that means whole foods, definitely legumes, which are at the top because they're so nutritious. The best way to do it is do it yourself, soaking the beans if you have the time, and then cooking them. Pressure cooking definitely takes a lot of time off. And when time is precious, that makes a big difference.
And I also give tips for if you about how to do the beans. If you forgot to soak them, you can do a quick soak, which is 3 inches of water above the beans, and then you bring it to a boil and leave it for 1 minute and drain that off. Or you can actually soak them, drain them, freeze them, and label them, and then you don't even have to remember to soak. And then since I wrote the book, I have what's called the quicker soak, which works with the Instant Pot pressure cooker, which has a zero setting and can be done on the stovetop or other electric cookers, where basically you use a low pressure, bring it to pressure, and then turn it off. And that takes about 25 minutes instead of the hour sitting if you boiled. So you don't even have to remember to soak. And then there are a lot of people, but I'm not one of them, who like to cook from dry and do no soak. And that works too. I just find better cooking if you do soak, but many people don't even bother soaking. And you can still cook your beans in 30 minutes or so at pressure.
Okay, so you've taught a lot of people how to use pressure cookers. Now, most of these people, I imagine, were curious and wanted to use the pressure cooker. For people who were really hesitant and then invested the time and the knowledge to get the experience, what have been like your favorite responses when they've got to the other side and they're just in love with pressure cooking?
Well, I think it's pretty much the same. It's like, why did I wait so long? I see this every day. Actually, there's a few Facebook groups. There's an Instant Pot vegan recipe group and many other groups. And people are like, and I actually have a video on YouTube about taking it out of the box, which is kind of just a short little funny video, like, it will be okay. but really, people just, I don't know what it is. They're like, oh, it's big, I don't know how to use it. And it's maybe, more fear than, like, your new computer or your new Blu-ray video or, the new TV thing. But we do have a little bit of fear about new things. Yeah. But really, people are like, I just can't believe I was afraid to do this or I didn't do it. I've heard this hundreds of times.
I remember in college, this was a long time ago, a friend of mine got a slow cooker, which I'm going to ask you to explain the difference after I tell my little anecdote. But she wanted to try it out with me her very first time, and she didn't clean it out of the box. And she made this bean dish. And afterwards, we were both feeling a little nauseous, and our tongues were solid black.
Oh!
I mean, there was obviously some residue in there that she should have washed out. So that kind of adds to my resistance, these memories that I have. But I know it's not the same thing. What's the difference?
Well, a slow cooker, what I say is the pressure cooker is a slow cooker on steroids. So the slow cooker and some of these electric pressure cookers now do have a slow cook function. So you can slow cook if you want to, but I rarely do that because I am not patient enough to slow cook. And the other thing is you have to think about slow cooking before it's dinner time. And I'm one of those people that it's like, oh, it's 5 o'clock. Maybe I ought to think about dinner. So it just is so much faster. It's a different process. And I think the food, for me, the food turns out way better in the pressure cooker than in the slow cooker. The slow cooker, I think, tends to mush the food all together. Mm. And the pressure cooker tends to give you very vibrant, beautiful food that still has a lot of texture and color and flavor.
Okay, for those of you who remember your chemistry lessons, I remember the law PV equals NRT, which is pressure times volume equals a constant times temperature. And as temperature goes up, pressure goes up. So if you keep the volume the same and you raise the pressure, you are able to cook at a higher temperature. And that's how this works, right?
Yes, it works by actually by taking the liquid and turning it to steam. And so you're not, people like want to do this thing with their beans. They cover them with water. It's like, no, you're not boiling. So you don't need to do that. So yes, you're cooking with steam, which is almost 250 degrees versus 212 for boiling. And a lot of people get that part wrong. It's almost funny. People just want to get to the recipes, so they skip mm-hmm. the beginning part of the book, which is actually the part that I think most people need to read, where I explain that. So, yes, it's all about the pressure and the temperature and the fact that this pot is sealed. And most people, unlike you, do not remember anything about science. And they're just like, oh, like they, you know, there's a lot of explaining. I like science. I'm a little geeky in that respect, which is why I think I really love pressure cooking, because it is all, it's about science and math. So there's a whole thing about the ratios that you use and the science you don't even actually need to know. You just need to learn a little bit about the timing, because timing in pressure cooking is the big difference between a success and a failure. So people say, well, I thought that 15 minutes would be fine. And it's like 15 minutes in pressure cooking time is like an hour to an hour and 15 minutes in real time. Mm. So you don't cook your carrots for 15 minutes. You only cook your carrots for like 2 minutes.
Wow.
So there's a lot of these little things that people like, they're just, people want to, I'll just say this, people want to wing it with their pressure cooker. And it's fine if you're making a soup and you don't care and everything's okay if it's mushy. But you don't wing recipes when you're pressure cooking if you want people to eat them. But with that said, for every pressure cooker, what I would call like a failure or semi-disaster, like if you overcook your beans, I give ways to take those and turn them into sauces, soups, dips, burgers. So there's no real failures. It's just like you wouldn't want to put those beans on a salad.
You know, that's good to know. People need to understand and have permission. I mean, aside from charring something and cooking it so that it's black, there are many ways to rescue recipes when they don't come out exactly the way you wanted them. And sometimes that may lead to a new wonderful recipe that you never thought about.
I completely agree with you. And I don't think, I mean, there are times food can get ruined, but, you know, ruined is just a matter of how you look at it. I mean, sometimes it is inedible, but a lot of times there is a way to take it and just turn it into another dish. My sister jokes with me that I'm the person that could take like the one dish and turn it into five things. So it started out as regular quinoa, then it became quinoa salad, then it became quinoa soup, and then it became, you know, quinoa burgers. I mean, you know, I think it's just food, and it's like I like to make individual ingredients and then kind of combine them to turn them into dishes that I think work.
Well, we recommend that all the time, especially for people that want to save time. You, if you're working full time or whatever your schedule challenge is, you've got kids, whatever it is, you take the day off that you have or a moment where you have some time and you make the basics. You make a big pile of beans, you make a big pile of grain, and then you do like Jill does, and every day you make something different out of them, and it's fun.
It's great. And the other thing I love to do, and I talk about it a lot in the book, is to freeze things. I mean, I freeze a lot of dishes, and then what I say is, because I do the cooking, I just say, sometimes I'm so busy and I just pretend that somebody loved me so much that they left exactly what I wanted in my freezer so I could just pull it out and eat it. And it's just like a beautiful thing. I was like, wow. And then I go, it was me. I loved me so much that I left that for me, you know? And it just really works. But I do freeze beans. I freeze grains. I freeze mixed dishes. I freeze soup. If it can be frozen, I will freeze it. And it's just an easy way. I mean, I don't think, you know, I think people think that I probably spend all my time in the kitchen cooking, but I don't have time to do that. So I just do what other people do and encourage other people to do what I do, which is make your life easier by cooking a lot at once and just having what you need. With that said, I really do love to cook fresh vegetables, you know, 3-4 times a week, as opposed to, you know, cooking a big batch. Like somebody just asked me about cooking 2.4 kilograms of broccoli at once. And I was like, well, I think I'd rather cook, you know, broccoli and have it for a few days than cook another batch. But, for me, it's like having the basics and then adding the fresh stuff with it. And then it all seems fresh.
I just have to take a moment and say, for those of you who listen regularly, it looks like the Mr. Softy truck is coming around the block in my neighborhood. It's now autumn in New York, and I don't think the ice cream truck got that message yet that it's time to go to the parking garage for another few seasons until summer comes back. It's like my theme song almost. Anyway, I also wanted to mention, I really should be curious and really get started with pressure cooking. Number one, because I love math. I was a mathlete in high school, and my background's in chemical engineering. So it seems like a perfect appliance that I should have in my home.
I think you're correct, Karen. You would get this very, very quickly. It's the people who don't understand math that really have a problem doing it. And I actually have a couple little charts in there for how to do things, because what happens is with grains, I use an algorithm to increase how much liquid you add each time, and it's not a straight number. So
okay, but we don't want to scare people away mathletes or chemical engineers.
Yeah, it's fine.
Everybody can get it.
And I actually spell it out. And if you double the liquid and you have a little too much, that's why they make slotted spoons. So.
Oh, very good. A slotted spoon doesn't hold much soup.
There you go.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned to me before we agreed to do this show today that a lot of pressure cookers are being sold.
Oh, you know, there are so many pressure cookers being sold that the Instant Pot, which is probably the most, I would say, well-loved and most sold pressure cooker. It's an electric pressure cooker that has many functions. You can make soy yogurt in it, which is very cool. They sold 214,000 of them on Amazon Prime Day. Mm. And that's a lot of pressure cookers. Now, I would say the majority of people are not following a plant-based or vegan diet, but a lot of them are. And so that's huge. And there's also other pressure cookers. I also love the Faeger Lux, which has many of the same functions. And so they're selling like crazy. And I'm guessing that probably at least 80% of the people are taking them out of the boxes and using them. And so this is new, and it's not new because I've been teaching it for 20 years, but now it's finally catching on. So I feel like I'm now getting kind of in with the pack instead of being ahead of the pack. Somebody told me if you wait long enough, the wave will catch up to you. And I kind of feel like it's getting there. So they sell so many of these. And I have noticed this in the last couple of years. My books are just kind of really flying off the shelves because of this. And I saw it with the new fast food, which some people call their pressure cooker Bible, which I'm like, wow. But people have said, because I don't say it, but people have said that I have the best pressure cooking timing charts that are out there. And I kind of think that they're really good because I'm pretty meticulous about these times, because that's what makes the difference between something good and something not so good. And I want everyone to have success when they use these pots.
Is there any pressure cookers out there that are easier in terms of math and science?
Well, no, not necessarily. Although the thing with the electric ones is you don't have to do any kind of adjustment on the stove. So if a recipe says to cook it for 4 minutes, you set the pot for 4 minutes. It will beep when it's done, and then you do either one of two things. It's called a natural pressure release, and that means you just wait until the pressure drops. Or the other thing you do is called a quick release, and this is when people start jumping high in the air because the steam comes out and they're terrified. And the thing that's interesting about that is that that's what you need to do if you're cooking vegetables, because you need to stop the cooking. But no, you can take the math out a little bit by just setting the pressure cooker and the following the time, and you don't really have to do much about the science part. That's kind of taken care of for you with the electrics.
Okay, so let's talk about your cookbook, Vegan Under Pressure, and how is it different from your other book that people are calling the Pressure Cook Bible?
Well, I say that the new fast food has more basic recipes in it, and Vegan Under Pressure has what I would call pressure cooking 2.0. I do things in there that I didn't do in the other book, like show people how to make cheesecake and cake and, steam things in there, like doing whole squash, which people love. So kind of like the next step, but still doable for most people. So it's just got more, I would say, inventive and creative recipes than the first book. But they're all doable once you get the basics down. And I do have basics in Vegan Under Pressure.
Now, you talked about cooking with a dish inside of the pressure cooker, and then you show how you can devise a handle to remove that dish.
Yes. And so it's called Pot and Pot Cooking, and there's something that came out since then, which is so cool. It is a silicone sling, and they make these from a company, and I get them and I sell them on my website, and I just call them silicone sling helper handles, and you can use those instead of foil. They are totally reusable. The foil still works fine, but it's just a little harder to get the dishes out. And the thing that's really important with that is those dishes are damn hot, so you've got to be really careful. But that's how you do cake, and that's how you do like an apple crisp. That's how you do cheesecake. But, yeah, that's called Pot and Pot Cooking. A lot of people use it to reheat dishes in the pressure cooker, which you do with steam. So you put in a cup of water, a rack, your dish, and then you set it at pressure for maybe 5 minutes, and you can heat up whatever you've cooked. But you do need to get the dish out. And so you can either make a foil sling, or you can get these helper handles, and either one works.
Ryan, I'm glad I asked you to find out about that silicone helper handle, because I imagine as manufacturers discover more people are doing this, they'll probably come up with some other enhancement in order to do pot and pot pressure cooking.
Well, I wish they would, but if they don't, I'm going to be jumping on it. My husband's been kicking me to do something for years now, and I'm like, I'm too busy, and but there's things that could really be improvements on the pressure cooker and what you can do in it. But the thing about the pot and pot that's great is I have done it with multiple things in the pressure cooker, which makes it really great. So I'll do rice on the bottom, put in the rack, put a dish on top of that, then put another dish on top of that. So I can do rice, beans, and one other thing in there at the same time. It's pretty wow. remarkable.
Pretty, yes. Okay. Am I ready, folks, for pressure cooking?
You could be, Karen. You could be. It's really, I mean, I bet there are people who don't know math or science who use it quite regularly.
Well, we'll see. Stay tuned. If you want to know if Karen does get a pressure cooker and starts cooking with it, you'll have to read my daily blog, What Vegans Eat, and see what happens. Stay tuned. Okay. So in addition to Vegan Under Pressure, which is really very comprehensive, people can find out a lot more about pressure cooking at your website. You mentioned there is a fun video there. I'm sure there's a bunch of videos there. And what's the website people can
access? It's theveggiequeen.com. And actually, I just discovered yesterday, I guess I should have known this, that there is a page that has all my videos on it. And people can look at them there. I'm also on YouTube under The VQ. And so I think a lot of people feel comfortable when they see me actually using it. And I think that helps.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad we had this opportunity to talk. It was kind of serendipitous that I had something completely scheduled for today. And then it changed. And the universe provided some wonderful people to talk to today, and that includes the Veggie Queen. I am so honored to be speaking with royalty today.
Thank you, Karen. And, you know, I'm all about pressure. So anytime something pops up, I just jump right in because I'm not afraid of the pressure, and nor vegans, nor cooking under pressure.
Okay. Thank you, Jill Nussenow, the Veggie Queen, with her new book, Vegan Under Pressure. Whoa. Awesome. Okay, before we move on to my next guest, I just wanted to take a moment to speak about water and pure water, because it's important to me, and I haven't talked about it in a while. But as you may know, if you've listened to this program for 7.5 years or so, I am a big fan of water distillation, and of all of the different types of water purification methods, I personally believe that distillation is the best because you can remove everything. Water distillation with a little charcoal filtration at the end is ideal. And I've been distilling my water forever. The thing that I love about it is every time you distill, you're getting the same clean water. The thing when you're using filtration systems is the filter continues to collect more and more contamination, so it becomes ultimately ineffective over time, and each time you use it, it becomes a little less efficient. But that's not true with distillation. So the reason why I'm bringing it up is because the Environmental Working Group puts out reports from time to time on water, tap water around the country, and there's a new article that they just posted on September 20th where they talked about chromium-6. It's a carcinogenic chemical, and nobody wants a big glass of chromium-6 in their water, right? Well, unfortunately, many, many regions in the country have high levels of this chromium-6. And there are other things that can be in your drinking water that you don't want in your drinking water. Arsenic and chlorine and fluoride's added to the water, unfortunately, in many places. Pesticides and lead. And sometimes they're there regularly, and sometimes there might be a leak that we don't really hear about. And in some areas, it might just go right into the drinking water. Well, the only way I think we can be safe is by purifying our water at the source. Tap water is great, and I am so grateful in the United States we have access to wonderful water right at our home. So it's important to have tap water, and it's so much better than bottled water because the bottles, to make the bottles, it takes so much energy and water just to make them, more than what's in the bottle, and then you don't know what's leaching into your water from the plastics. It's not a good thing. Anyway, I recommend distillation. So if you go to responsibleeatingandliving.com, that's where I live, responsibleeatingandliving.com, I posted a new article about distillation and what we recommend here at responsiblebleedingandliving.com. I've tried lots of distillers, and there's only one that's my favorite, and it's made in the United States. So find out more at responsiblebleedingandliving.com. All right. I should have a glass of water right now to drink, but I didn't prepare one, so I have to go dry. Now on to the second part of the show. More love happening here. We're tuning in love one more time. And I'm going to bring on Allison Rivers Sampson and Michelle Sen to talk about the dairy detox. Hello, lovely people.
Hi, Karen. It's Allison.
Hi, Allison.
And hello.
Michelle, did I pronounce your name right?
Very close. It's pronounced Michelle Kane, but no one will ever know that.
Oh, it's a heartsy.
Yeah.
It's a heartsy. Okay. Very good. Okay. The dairy detox. So I'm just going to turn it over to you. Tell me about it.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, first of all, for having us on the show. It's been a long time since we did this, right?
Actually, I should tell everybody, Allison Rivers Sampson, you're an award-winning chef, the author of Comfortably Young, and the founder of the first vegan online bakery, Allison's Gourmet, which has fed us so sweetly for so many years. Thank you for that. And is it true Allison's Gourmet is going away?
Yes, yes. In fact, I think today is our final shipping day.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, after 20 years, I am moving on to some new projects, and I get to talk with you about one of them today, which is the Dairy Detox, and I'm so, so excited. And thank you for all your support throughout the years for Allison's Gourmet. It was such a fabulous adventure for me to do and to get to serve so many people and be a part of so many celebrations. And also very exciting to move on.
Yeah, one of the things people often say when they're confronted with the idea of going vegan is they think they're going to be deprived. And you proved over and over that there's no deprivation, at least in terms of sweets. You could just make everything and wonderfully.
Absolutely.
And now Michelle Kane is a filmmaker on a mission to make dairy-free life living enticing, easy, and fun through gorgeous photography and visual storytelling. And she's the founder of World of Vegan and co-author of the Friendly Vegan Cookbook and a YouTube personality who has reached millions through her creative, relatable, and engaging vegan videos. Now, how is it the two of you came together to team up?
Michelle, you want to take that?
Sure. So I have worked with numerous vegan and animal rights nonprofits over the years. And at the time that Allison and I met, I was working at PETA Foundation, and I was organizing our events, our weekend events for our supporters. And we brought Allison to come and do a cooking demo because of the wonderful skills she has in the cooking department. And we just really connected then and have been close friends ever since. And it was, years down the line when we both were kind of ready to take on new projects and adventures that we realized it would be a perfect opportunity to team up and do some really great things to help people, planet, animals. And that's how we eventually landed on the Dairy Detox.
Yeah, and we're so lucky. I mean, if I could have written a personal ad to find my perfect business partner, I don't know that I could have done as well as Michelle. I mean, she and I have such a wonderful synergy. I just am amazed over and over. We started creating this program over a year ago and the Dairy Detox, and it's just amazing to me. Every step we take, it's like, oh my gosh, another synergy. How amazing. So I feel really lucky that we get to work together. And Michelle has done some beautiful photography and all the videography for our program. And so how about if I tell you what the Dairy Detox is?
That sounds like a good thing.
Okay. So the Dairy Detox is a 12-day online video course that is delivered directly to people's inboxes so that everything is very convenient, and the two of us are sharing tips and everything that people need to know to go dairy-free. So each day we cover a different topic about dairy-free living. We talk about health. We talk about nutrition. We talk about why we have this addiction to dairy, what's the science behind that. We talk about what you can use for the different things like milk, cheese, butter, and all the other dairy products that people are used to eating. And we tell people, like, this is a detox, and they get to choose their own adventure. So they can either just go and, you know, we guide them how to navigate the grocery store shelves so that if they just want to buy prepared foods that are dairy-free, they can do that. Or if they want to go to the other end of the spectrum, they can use the homemade recipes that I've created for the course, and they can learn how to make everything themselves. So we wanted people to have options, and that's what we've done. Do you want to add anything, Michelle?
One of the great benefits of the course is all the recipes that Allison, you've kind of specially crafted with your years of expertise in the kitchen to make it really easy for people to take their health into their own hands and learn more about food and getting in the kitchen and see how easy it really is to make our favorite foods out of things like nuts and seeds and really basic foods that are convenient for everyone to find and make. And you can actually transform it into like delicious cheesy sauces and dressings and all of those dairy-free things that people assume they'll be missing out on if they go dairy-free.
Yeah, we know they're so not missing out.
Exactly. Well, we all know that, but getting the point across to everybody else is the challenge, and we're doing it with love.
Absolutely.
Like I like to say, we're tuning in love here, and it's all about food and it's all about love. We're coming from a place of love. We want everybody to be nourished and happy while not doing harm to ourselves and other living beings and the planet. Now, I've been vegan since 1988, over 28 years now.
Wow. Woo-hoo. That's amazing.
Woohoo!
That's
yes.
Incredible.
And
so you've seen a lot of change.
Yeah, absolutely. And many people, including myself, maybe not as much anymore, I don't know, but the natural way was, for me, was to eliminate red meat and then chicken and fish, and then the last things to go were dairy and eggs. And I always say if I were going to do it any other way or do it again, dairy would be the first to go. I think it's the most unhealthful food. It is not a healthy food in any form, milk, cheese, otherwise. And I also think, although it's not intuitive, the way we raise dairy cows today is so horrific, so cruel. And these poor, precious animals are just treated horribly from birth till death. And it's probably a worse life than those raised for meat. Because dairy cows Definitely. Become meat in the end.
Right. It's true.
Yeah. People don't even
realize
that.
That's one of our most powerful days within the dairy detox. Our goal with the dairy detox is to reach people who are really looking to do something great for their health. But in the later days of the dairy detox program, we talk about the impacts on the environment and the impacts on animals and just the impacts on our planet. And our day about animals, I think, was the most powerful one for both Allison and I, because we are huge animal lovers, and Allison is a mom, so she knows the connection between a mother and baby, which is so frequently broken and torn apart in the dairy industry. And we're really excited to see people who haven't even really thought about the food choices affecting beyond themselves to get to those days and to learn about these issues in a really powerful and impactful way. So we spent a lot of time like really trying to make those days as impactful as we possibly could, while still staying, you know, very non-graphic and very easy to absorb from the viewer.
Well, since I got the opportunity to review the program, I've listened to the first seven, I think.
Oh, great.
Yep. And very well done, very clean and shiny and happy and easy, with lots of great materials. So I didn't get to some of the animal-related issues, but one thing that people talk about all the time is, well, I have organic dairy. Isn't organic dairy better?
Well, it's actually, so day 10 is the day that we cover the animal issues. Make sure you check that one out, Karen. I think you'll really enjoy it. I mean, as much as you can enjoy hearing how that is. But the way that we present it, I think, is in a really compassionate way. I think that most people are unwittingly, just like the cows are, a lot of people are unwittingly entangled in this industry that is feeding us lies, really. And what we're doing is breaking myths, and we're helping people see through the veil of the culture, the mainstream culture that has told us things like that dairy can be good for you, it can be healthy, it can be done kindly, organic is better, grass-fed, all of these things that are actually just marketing terminology that really preys on compassionate consumers. And it's really frustrating once we see behind the veil to the truth that's what it is, that we're being manipulated. It's very eye-opening. And so what I discovered is that organic is actually worse for the animals. And I didn't know this. The reason that it's worse for the animals is that when they get infections, there are a lot more limited choices that the, I don't even know what you call them. I mean, they're called farmers, but I wouldn't call them a farmer. I mean, I think when we say farmer, we think of, like, you know, that old-fashioned farmer sitting on an overturned pail, and that is the farthest thing from what's going on in the dairy industry today. But whatever you call them, they can't treat the animals with antibiotics because humans don't want antibiotics in their milk. So the animals actually suffer with things like mastitis, which is an udder infection that comes from overproduction, and that happens with dairy cattle because of the way that we're raising them and what we're forcing their bodies to do, which is absolutely unnatural. So that's just one example of these animals aren't getting the treatment and medical care they need, so they're actually suffering worse.
Oh, I didn't know that. Just one more sad thing to add to that very awful pile, and why we don't want to consume dairy, and why this course is so important. Now, you know, here we are, it's 2016, and there seems to be this growing movement, which obviously you're aware of, where more people are learning online through webinars, course programs like this, rather than opening a book. And what is happening here?
Go ahead, Michelle.
All right. Yeah. So it's one of the beauties today with technology and with social media that we have so many more opportunities to learn a really high-level things that didn't used to be accessible unless you were going to go dig around in the basement of an old library. This stuff is now accessible to the everyday consumer. They can just open up their computer. They can find courses. They can find free videos online to learn the information they're looking to learn. And one of the beautiful things with something like a detox course or the dairy detox is that making lifestyle choices that enter, you know, your everyday life are really difficult to do when you feel isolated and alone. And a lot of times if you're just picking up a book and you're reading a book in your own home, you can feel very alone. Like, you're the only one seeing this. How are you going to get everyone else to, like, understand what you're doing? So when you're able to sign up for an online e-course, you kind of have instant friends. Like, Allison and I are eager to become supporters and cheerleaders and resources and friends with the people who sign up for the dairy detox so that they don't feel so alone. And I know with a lot of, probably the three of us all went vegan, you know, before it became the hit trendy thing to do. And there was probably, for most people that I talked to in my own experience, felt like a sense of being alone and not knowing who to turn to and not having, like, those accessible people and resources to kind of guide you along the way and share their knowledge. So that's one of the awesome things about being able to create a course where we're able to connect with people face to face in a much more personal way than we could through a book.
Allison, you are both moms, Allison and Michelle, right?
No, Michelle's not. Just me.
And just Allison.
Oh, I thought you were a mom. Okay. Well, I remember a long time ago, and I know it's still true, that families that went vegan and were bringing up their young children without milk got a lot of feedback at the schools, a lot of bad feedback, saying, you know, you're a child abuser, you're doing terrible things, kids absolutely need milk. So I imagine a forum can be really beneficial where people can share some of their fears and some of the negative things that are going on in their life while they're going through this transition.
Yes, and that's part of the Dairy Detox program that we've created, is that all of our students will be part of our Facebook group that's just for students and alumni. And so they'll be able to come in there and ask questions, share recipes, share inspiration, different tips, so that people can have that experience of discovering together. And that speaks to what Michelle is saying about how we want to create this as a supportive community, so that people aren't making this change that can feel really huge in the beginning in isolation. Instead, we want them to feel held and supported through the transition, because it's really the transition time that's the difficult part. It's not what happens after the transition, right? I mean, it's really the, well, how do I get from here to there? And then once people open their eyes and they know how to do this, and they have the whys, like, why am I doing this? It's much easier.
You've probably heard this. I know I have a gazillion, million, trillion times when I talk about how bad dairy foods are. Often the response is, oh, I don't eat a lot of dairy. And until you decide not to eat dairy, and I'm sure you discover in this course all of the foods that contain or may contain dairy that you didn't realize, you don't realize that it's in like so many foods.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing that I've had a lot of people say to me is, oh, I tried non-dairy milk and I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. Which is one of, you know, the first things that we cover in our course, because it's often like the most obvious switch that you can make is just switching cow's milk for almond milk or nut milk or soy milk or any of the other milks out there. But the thing that a lot of people don't realize when they first start shopping for dairy-free milk is it's not just cow's milk or dairy-free milk. It's cow's milk or hemp milk, cashew milk, almond milk, soy milk, like flax milk. Like, there's so many options out there, and they all have different flavor profiles. You can get them sweetened or unsweetened, and there's so many different varieties there that need to be explored so you can find the ones that really resonate with you and that you love. And the other thing is, people just, you learn, I feel like anyone who's gone vegan or made a dietary change learns that how flexible our taste buds are, and that we really can adapt, and we do adapt to anything that we become used to. That's why in some cultures, you know, durian is this like smelly, uniquely flavored fruit. I think it's a fruit that some people love, and someone from another culture can go and try that and spit it out or not even be able to breathe around it. We start to love the things that we're used to. So it is definitely what Allison was saying. It's that transition period that's challenging, and after that, it's effortless. So we're here to make that transition period easy and fun and really fun. We try and make our videos engaging and upbeat and inspiring, and just really make the process not feel challenging, not feel overwhelming. We break it down day by day, step by step, and we make it fun.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, there are some specific details to it, but it doesn't have to be this heavy, difficult thing. It's just learning something new, and we present the information in a really friendly and accessible way so that, you know, people feel like their hands are held. And we also really value people's time. And so we've made this program extremely efficient. And to go back to what Michelle was saying earlier about online courses, the other really huge benefit is that, number one, you don't have to get in your car, drive through traffic, show up at a certain time, sit in a classroom in an environment that you may or may not feel comfortable in. I mean, you don't even have to take a shower to take our course. And so it's all very, very much intended for convenience and respecting time. So people can watch it at any time. I mean, even if during the 12 days, maybe they get behind one day or something, the videos are very potent and intended to be like, here's everything that you need to know. There's no extra fluff, but it's also done in a really beautiful and streamlined way.
I think dairy milk tastes gross. And I thought it tasted gross as a kid. You know, it had to be really cold, or I had to mix it with a lot of chocolate. And they're doing that more these days, adding sugar and flavorings just to get kids to drink milk because it's gross.
It's gross.
And if you like milk, when you do a detox, you will, I promise, get to a point where you think milk tastes gross too. That's cow's milk.
It's so true. It's very got like this animal component to it that I think most people don't know. I can actually smell it on people, but I'm part dog, so I'm kind of a super smeller in that way. And that's what's helped me with being a chef, but I can smell it on people. And there is like this very animal component to it, and people get used to it. It's just like what Michelle was saying, is that there is a dairy-free milk for everyone.
Now, I wish you a lot of luck, and I hope many, many people get off dairy and take your course and do really well with it and thrive. This may be too early to ask this question, but are there any plans to make this course available in Chinese and in Hindu?
Well, Michelle?
I mean, obviously, the reason why I'm asking this question is because we're slowly learning in the United States how bad dairy is for us. And unfortunately, many of the developing nations and these growing nations like China and India are behind the times, unfortunately, when it comes to nutrition. And they're getting increasingly sick with chronic disease. And China, there's this big demand drive to create more dairy. They need this class.
I agree with you. We're definitely planning to, you know, at some point, some stage down the road, I definitely envision this being in other languages. And, you know, it's funny, a lot of people think that lactose intolerance is this unusual health ailment, but two out of every three is lactose intolerant worldwide. So it's actually very, very common. And the reason is that it's abnormal for us to drink milk that comes from a mammal after our growing years. Our bodies aren't made to do that. And we go into all the details about that in the dairy detox.
Okay, the last thing I want to talk about is cheese. Cheese, because everybody talks about, oh, I can't give up cheese. And here it is 2016, and we have more wonderful options. The original non-dairy cheeses were pretty disgusting, but now there are so many that are wonderful that you can make at home or buy in the store. Just tell me a little bit about cheese and your cheeses.
So cheese we're in a wonderful time right now to be launching this course, because on anything that you could miss with dairy, there's dairy-free alternatives. And cheese is one of the fastest growing, recent explosions, vegan cheeses and dairy-free cheeses. We've got Miyoko's Kitchen, Dr. Cow, Kite Hill, Heidi Ho, Vtopia, Punk Rock Labs, Follow Your Heart, Feel Growth, Cheese. Like, there's so many brands right now that are jumping, Adea, of course.
Cow.
That are jumping on the vegan cheese train. and they're getting a lot better so fast. So it's really like, you don't have to look at it as giving up cheese anymore. People say, I can never live without cheese. Fine, don't live without cheese. Just switch over to these million varieties over here. And it used to be like, try it and 50% of the time they were awful, or they didn't melt, or they, you know, would fall apart when heated or something. But now, like, a bigger and bigger percentage of the vegan cheeses out there are really delicious. They're winning awards. Like, the innovation is just so rapid. And it's a really exciting time to make a decision in your life where you're excited about trying these things. Because every time you go to the grocery store, there's a new brand or a new variety of vegan cheese out there that you get to try. And it's just a really fun adventure.
One of the things that needs to happen soon is at a federal level with the FDA and at a state level is that we are able in every state to call these non-dairy cheeses. We need to be able to call them cheese.
Yeah.
we can't do that everywhere.
And we need to stop bailing out the dairy industry when their supply has overgrown from demand, you know, when their supply is beyond what the demand is. I think, you know, we know about these recent stories in the news about how the government is bailing out the dairy industry because fewer and fewer people are purchasing dairy products. So we need to, like, redo all these subsidies and things like that. And so hopefully that will be part of the process.
Absolutely. Well, this has been lovely. I'm so excited about your program, the Dairy Detox. And if people are listening and interested, you can just go to responsibleeatingandliving.com for this interview. It's right there. You can find out more about the Dairy Detox. Or you can go directly, and the website is?
TheDairyDetox.com.
DairyDetox.com. Okay, well, let's get more people detoxing off dairy.
Absolutely.
Yes, Karen. Thank you. Thank you, Allison, and thank you, Michelle. I wish you well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everybody, that was Allison Rivers Sampson and Michelle Kane, and they've got the Dairy Detox course ready for you. I know a lot of you still haven't gotten over the cheese thing and the dairy thing, and maybe this is what's going to help you. I hope so. Okay, just like a minute left or so. Oh, I'm going to take a breath. Whew. And just speaking of cheese, right? Yesterday, we made open-faced tempeh Reuben sandwiches. You can read about it at What Vegans Eat Day 594, which I just posted today. That included field roast chow slices. Of course, we can't call them chow cheese. We call them chow slices, but they are one of our favorites when we don't make our own cheese at home. They are easy and accessible and very, very flavorful. I hope you check them out. And wow, we've come to the end of the show. I can't believe it. I could talk all day about food. You know that. Thank you for tuning in love with me today, for tuning in. It's all about food. I'm Karen Hartglass, and please have a very delicious week.